Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rutan.
And Ken, this week there will be no jokes because we are in a serious financial crisis.
We are. But thank God we have a candidate of change who's going to make this all go away.
We have two of them. Everyone's the candidate of change.
Well, I was thinking of John McCain.
Well, I was thinking of both the candidates. I think both the candidates claim to be the agent of change.
Well, first of all, let's just start the overall picture is we are no longer talking about Sarah Palin, which is bad for the podcast because that's what we like to talk about.
And we're not doing a lot of moose material like some NPR shows. I don't want to mention any names, all things considered.
A bull, when they are coming in to gather up cows, they make a small guttural, it's almost like a burping noise. Oh, 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 oh. And then a cow calls, when she's calling and she's in estrus and ready and trying to get bulls to come over to her, she makes a long, drawn-out I did that the other day, and those moose came at a dead run from 500 yards away. They got into 20 yards of us.
That was, of course, the legendary Alaska moose guide, Joe Dilley. But a week ago when we did this podcast, we had two more major investment houses in New York, in on Wall Street, than we have now. Lehman Brothers has disappeared. Merrill Lynch has been absorbed by Bank of America. Who knows who's next? We've only got two actual American investment banks left, Goldman Sachs and
the Republican National Committee.
And Morgan Stanley. And we really don't know which of the major financial institutions around the globe is next going to be swept under the rug by this enormous real estate mortgage crisis credit crunch that we're going through.
That's why there are three observations here. One, we're no longer wasting time by doing the podcast and doing peripheral things like lipstick and silly stuff about Sarah Palin.
Isn't it remarkable? One week ago, that was all that anyone was talking about in the political world. It was dominating the conversation. And now we've moved on to something that is equally dominating, but by contrast, rather real.
Two, if the conversation switches from Sarah Palin to the economy, I think you and I both agree that this has to favor the Democratic Party. It has to favor Barack Obama, given the fact that George Bush has been the president the last 8 years. John McCain has never really differentiated much, not really, from Republican orthodoxy on regulating the financial markets, on things like that.
That's right. And he has been advised over a number of years, really, and also in recent months, by a longtime friend of his from the Senate, Phil Graham, the former senator from Texas, who now, since he left the Senate voluntarily, has been an advisor to a large Swiss-based investment house, UBS, and is seen as one of the fathers, really, of the whole deregulatory trend of the 90s, even back to the 80s when he was in the Senate under Ronald Reagan, and then through the 90s and into the current decade. So someone who has always been seen on the side of getting government out of the regulatory role and letting the markets rule, which the markets have done, and now the ruling markets are roiled.
And the third part of this equation is that if you look at the latest bunch of polls, and again, the state polls are still very close, but in national polls, Barack Obama seems to, if not opened up a small lead, at least the polling has gone back. It looks like what it is prior to both conventions.
That's right. He's restored essentially the pre-Palin condition of having a very narrow 3-4 point national lead based largely on dominance among women overall and dominance among non-white voters.
Right.
That's really where his strength is. So you said a moment ago something that you said we'd both agree on, and I think we generally do, that
if the conversation is about the economy, it's good for the Democratic
Party. That's right, in the sense that if the conversation is about a confrontation with Russia or a confrontation over Iraq or Iran, that probably helps John McCain, who's seen as more the national security candidate.
Right.
I understand all of that. But what I might disagree with is when you say it's good news for the Democratic Party. Yes, traditionally, talking about a failing economy, a collapsing economy, has been the classic great argument for the Democrats.
If the Republicans are in power.
If the Republicans are in power, like 1932, or for that matter, even 1992, when George Bush was president, even though the Democrats were controlling Congress. Yes, that's the classic argument. But the next thing you said was, and for its candidate, Barack Obama. And that's where I think maybe question marks will arise, because I'm not sure that Barack Obama has made the sale around the country, borrow a cliche, that he is representative of the Democratic tradition of somehow putting government back on the side of the people. That is a personal conviction I'm not sure people have gone for yet, and that's part of the reason he's never been able to break 50% in the polls, even when he's on the upswing.
I think there's absolute truth to that, and I think we're in the middle of a flux of a wave here that we may not know where it goes. But I think the fact that John McCain started the week by saying that in his opinion the economy is fundamentally sound.
Let's hear him say that, because this is something that's really going to be resonating.
Wait, I didn't make that up. He really said that?
Let's hear him say it. Let's make sure he said it.
Okay.
Our economy, I think, still, the fundamentals of our economy are strong, but these are very, very difficult times.
This is being called a gaffe. This is being called a big opening for the Democrats that John McCain came out and said something nice about the economy, and even though it was in the context of really complimenting the people he was talking to.
It was also in the same context of the front page of the headlines that the Wall Street is tanking, that stocks are, people are losing their life savings.
So what's the downside? That he looks out of touch? That
yes.
He looks like he hasn't read the paper?
Yes.
Or is it that he's once again cast as somebody who really only has empathy with people for whom this isn't a problem?
No, I don't believe that's what it was. I think what he did in a way was Gerald Ford's Eastern Europe is not dominated by Soviet Union. He didn't mean that, of course he knew that Soviet Union was dominating Eastern Europe.
He could see a tank when he saw it.
Right, but the people felt that they were not
spiritually.
Exactly. I think that's exactly what he meant. But again, one party jumped on it, the Democratic Party jumped on it, and effectively, I thought, because again, with 500-point loss one day, 300-point loss another day, with a lot of people nervous about the markets and all the things like that, and for John McCain to say fundamentally sound, but you know, within hours, there was a, you know, we always talk about the market having a correction. John McCain had a market correction.
I think it was 2 hours. Literally,
yeah, exactly.
2 hours later, he came out and had a very different tune.
I know Americans are hurting now. And the fundamentals of our economy are at risk. They are at risk. The great workers, the great innovators, because of the greed of Wall Street and the greed and the abuse that's taken place, which has put our very economy at risk. Our economy is at risk today.
Wow, this is a script he is not as familiar with. And he has said of himself that he is fundamentally a deregulator, that he is fundamentally a child of the Reagan Revolution in the 1980s, a soldier, as he put it, in the Reagan Army, and that was all about getting as little government as possible and having as much freedom, particularly in the economic sphere, as there could possibly be. So he's got a fundamental problem in trying to detach himself from that philosophy and present himself as an agent of change toward a government on your side, we're going to protect you. And the person that he's got out there trying to sell this, we're going to put government back on the side of the people argument, is, of course, his running mate, Sarah Palin. And now we see Sarah Palin in a somewhat different light, not so much as celebrity, but as a, if you will, serious part of the McCain pitch. He's got to try to move himself more into a populist mode, and she helps with that, don't you think?
I do, but at the same time, I mean, until this week, neither John McCain nor Sarah Palin was somebody I would turn to for what to do about the economy. I think John McCain's whole resume is about foreign policy and homeland security, national security. Sarah Palin obviously has the everyday mom approach to politics that has won over so many people. But look at Barack Obama for a second. I mean, other than saying that John McCain is a third Bush term, other than saying that the past 8 years the economy has not worked or that there have been failures by policies, what has Barack Obama and Joe Biden, remember Joe Biden, that guy from Delaware.
Yes, the name is vaguely familiar.
Yeah. What have they suggested, what have they offered as far as solutions to this crisis?
I don't believe that they've offered any sort of a detailed plan whatsoever. I don't think either camp has, but they are competing for the impression, if you will, to convey the idea that they are more inclined to use the powers of government to save the little guy.
And this goes back to our theory from day one that ultimately this election will be decided on who people would rather have in as president, John McCain or Barack Obama, not the focus on the running mate, not, you know, all the things that...
There is probably going to be a growing argument that you either want or do not want a president who is of the same party as the majority party in Congress. I'm not seeing any credible evidence that the Democrats will not gain in both the House and the Senate. They're certainly going to be the majority party in the new year. So do you want a president who is a Democrat and can work with them and move in some sort of decisive direction to actually change national policy with respect to financial issues? Or do you want to have the ballast, the check, if you will, of having a Republican president since it's going to be a Democratic Congress?
I agree with you. The Democrats are probably going to gain at least 4 seats in the Senate. It's still question mark how many they gain in the House, but it looks like they will have gains. And so the old argument that you need split government, maybe the Democrats are saying we do want John McCain in the White House.
I think before we get to November 4th, that will become one of the arguments that the Republicans are using.
Which was the George H.W. Bush argument. 1992, Democratic control of Congress, you need somebody to watch out for those big spenders in Washington.
Let's talk a little bit more about what we've learned about Sarah Palin in just the last week, and actually it's just been 3 weeks since we first began talking about her at all, and we've learned a good bit as various and sundry agencies have gone to work on filling in a lot of the blanks about Sarah Palin.
By the way, just let me interrupt here for the record. This podcast did talk about Sarah Palin throughout the spring as a potential running mate. We didn't think she would be it, but we did talk about her pluses and minuses back when people didn't know who she was.
And when we didn't know who she was.
Or who I was.
It was one of those occasions when we were pressing it by talking about something we knew nothing about.
That's right.
What about this journalism that's appearing here and there? The New York Times did an extensive story last Sunday as part of what seemed to be the dedication of the entire 4-inch-thick Sunday New York Times to going after Sarah Palin on every conceivable level. But on the front page, they did a story about the way she had functioned in office as mayor of Wasilla and then as governor of Alaska, with a lot of emphasis on how she rewarded friends and, as they put it, lashed her foes. And, of course, one of the other things that's going on is that she is absolutely fascinating to all the entertainment media. For example, well, Saturday Night Live absolutely had to do what they did this last Saturday night.
But tonight we are crossing party lines to address the now very ugly role that sexism is playing in the campaign. An issue which I am frankly surprised to hear people suddenly care about. You know, Hillary and I don't agree on everything.
Anything. I believe that diplomacy should be the cornerstone of any foreign policy.
And I can see Russia from my house.
That, of course, was not really Sarah Palin and Hillary Clinton, but Tina Fey, longtime Saturday Night Live actress.
Who looks so much like Sarah Palin.
And writer, who is an absolute dead ringer for Sarah Palin, and also had gone to some lengths, of course, to perfect an impression of her, which was so good that I think a lot of people around the country gasped and said, is that really Sarah Palin? The other one, of course, was Amy Poehler, who has been playing Hillary Clinton all year long on Saturday Night Live.
Less effectively, but still in
but
this
recognizably.
Bit, yes, yeah, exactly. And this bit was very good. And actually, I mean, it was very, very funny, and it also said something. You know, Amy Poehler, of course, did not get the attention in this, but she did say the line, it's interesting now that Republicans are now understanding that there might be sexism in this reporting.
Well, and she was also, I think, strongly implying that the media had not taken seriously enough the accusations of sexism when she was running against Barack Obama.
One quick line, though, about the real Hillary Clinton. You know, a question to my Political Junkie column this week came saying that would Hillary Clinton be blamed if she did not do everything possible to help Barack Obama become president? I think she is doing. She still is doing everything that's asked of her. I mean, there are some people who say that, like, for example, there was a member of the Democratic National Committee and on the platform committee and a Hillary supporter this week who endorsed John McCain. And we always wonder how many Hillary supporters secretly wish that John McCain wins so Hillary can come back in 4 years and run again. But I think Hillary Clinton has done everything that's asked of her. She campaigned in Ohio. She campaigned in Florida. And while she has noticeably not gone out of her way to attack Sarah Palin, she certainly has made the case for Obama and why the McCain victory would be bad for the country.
Okay, so Hillary's been in Florida and Ohio. What's going on in Florida and Ohio? Is Florida still, in some sense or another, in play, or is that gone McCain? And what's going on in Ohio? Is it still tied?
First, let's remind our listener that national polls again have seemed to erase that McCain national lead, even though most of the national polls have really had it very, very close. Even in the post-Palin surge,
there was 1+10 for McCain.
That was the only one.
USA Today poll showed him up double digits. Nobody else did. It seemed to come back to earth. Now it seems to have slipped back to Obama being just a few points
ahead. The New York Times CBS poll this week showed that
3-4.
Exactly, 4 points.
Quinnipiac, same thing.
But in state polls, you talk about state polls, the thing that struck me the most this week is that Quinnipiac poll in New Jersey has Obama up by 3 points, a massive movement of white voters to McCain in New Jersey. I still don't think New Jersey is a swing state. I still don't think it's going to be close in November, but I thought the poll this week was interesting. Also, In Florida, there seems to be a steady McCain lead, and perhaps McCain gaining on that. Jewish voters remain ambivalent, but questioning Barack Obama. I've heard this not only anecdotally, but I've seen it in the polls as well. But if there was a sense of movement towards McCain, that's not evident in states like Ohio and Virginia, two Republican states, two states, especially Ohio, that McCain has got to win. Virginia is still dead even though it hasn't gone for a Democrat since Lyndon Johnson in 64. Ohio, which a Republican has never won without Ohio, still shows Obama gaining in critical areas of the state. That's another state that, as much as Pennsylvania is important for Obama, I suggest that Ohio was critical for McCain.
So we have still to go a little more than a week before the first debate. That first debate is going to be on foreign policy. It follows a week in which the United Nations holds its General Assembly.
The debate will be Friday the 26th.
That's right. And then there will be a vice presidential debate on October 2nd, another debate between the two presidential candidates in town hall format on October 7th, and then another debate, this time on domestic policy, October 15th. And then we have the last run-up to the actual election, just a few weeks until the actual vote. In the past, when an election has been this close, it has largely broken one way or the other based on the debates. We saw that in 1980. We saw it in 1992. We saw it in 2000. Do you see this year's election coming down to who wins the debates?
I do, but let me go back to 80 and 92 for one quick second. In 1980, there was only one debate. The race was very close. It was at the end. Reagan clearly outshone President Carter in that debate, and then there was tremendous movement to Reagan at the end.
He was reassuring to people who weren't real sure how they felt about Ronald Reagan. Isn't this guy the actor? Wasn't he kind of way out there on the right wing? And he was so reassuring and so calm and so fatherly in that debate that it looked like he was the incumbent and Jimmy Carter was the upstart.
Whereas in 1992, President Bush was, the first President Bush, was always on the defensive. His numbers did not look...
Let me check my watch. Okay, yeah, we've still got a little time.
That's exactly what Bush did at the debate, and one of the debates, and also he needed to hit a home run. I think if you're trailing badly in a debate, it's hard to imagine that ever being a game changer. But if it's even like it is now, I agree with you, even though unlike 1980 when there was only one debate, you have three debates plus a VP debate, I think they still could be a game changer. And we keep talking about how the polls have shifted since the Democratic convention, since the Republican convention, and in the last couple of days because of the economic crisis. I still say there are more sea changes to come before November 4th.
A lot of things still up in the air, a lot of question marks. That's it for this week's political podcast.
Hopefully next week will be a funnier podcast. You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/elections.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR News.
North to Alaska, go north for Russia's own. North to Alaska, go north for Russia's own. Big Sam left Seattle.